The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry, it's Professor Mara Livesey.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Can't wait for this beautiful weekend where I'm doing something big, but I can't tell you about it.
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to, and we really can't talk about it, but we'll talk about it in future episodes.
We sure will.
Yeah,
I can say this much. There will be an element of surprise.
Oh, man.
Element. Oxygen, right?
That's right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so that's exactly what we're doing. I'm looking outside. I think I have a high school football game to go to tonight, so this should be great. Like, as I see the clouds roll in, should be.
Is your son playing?
No, but it's, so last year, Shrine of Little Flower, you know, Catholic League, that's where I'm going tonight, they won a contest to be the Detroit Lions Game of the Week, and suddenly, this high school of just 250 students has one Lions legend coming to the game, one current Lions player, and all of the Lions cheerleaders.
Whoa.
And it's just interesting. And so I was like, I just want to be there for the spectacle, frankly. Just maybe stay for a half
the
or something like that. Well, there's all sorts of rumors that, you know, Matt Stafford's going to show up or something. And I'm
so like, who's the Lions legend?
Good question. Everybody's like, "Ooh, Barry Sanders." I'm like, "Oh yeah, he's got plenty of things."
Rory. Rory showing up.
Actually, Rory will be there as well. But will he count for the legend or the current line?
You never know. Lem Barney could use a couple of bucks. He could be inside the costume. I mean, no.
My parents listened to the show, so they already know what I'm about to say. But we had sort of a surprise visit from my uncle from Grand Rapids, who grew up in Berkeley. The visit was a couple weeks ago. He did not grow up in Berkeley a couple weeks ago. And he had been given a gift card for Vincetta Garage by someone, even though he lives in Grand Rapids. Like, when am I going to use this? So he comes into town, decides to treat us for dinner. And as we're in the back Half Moon booth, Matt Stafford and Amendola, the former Patriots receiver, walk into Vincetta Garage and walk right by us. And I'm like, interesting. Very interesting world that we live in. Continuing around the table, Professor Jeff Boats is back from the Department of Mathematics.
Howdy. And speaking of NFL cheerleaders, I think you guys did a show several weeks ago where you said that there were certain NFL teams that didn't have cheerleaders.
That's right.
And you said one of them was the Buffalo Bills. And I can tell you, yes, they do have cheerleaders. They're called the Buffalo Jills. So that was a mistake.
Oh. Wow. Okay.
Now, are they officially sanctioned?
Jill?
I don't know how it all works, but I just remember going to Buffalo Bills games as a kid at Rich Stadium, and the Jills were performing down on the track.
Okay.
No, because do you guys remember, was it like before the Lions got the official cheerleaders, they had the unofficial ones?
Yeah.
So they'd have the colors, but you know, they had to buy a seat and everything like that.
Well, I mean, it doesn't sound like it's any better to have official cheerleaders, I can tell you that. It has come around the table to Professor Dan Maggio of the First Organization.
I'm going through all the elements. Would this have a awe-inspiring moment?
I'm so glad you mentioned that and not like arsenic or something like that. Who are you going to poison?
It's surprisium.
Yeah, you use arsenic and then you bury them.
There you go.
So I've this is recorded, so if I'm right, we have proof.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm doing great.
Oh, Dan. Very good for the element of surprise. Going all the way around the table and almost back, Professor Dave Chow is here doodling. Ooh, it looks like
lions.
A dog. Okay.
Oh,
a lion.
The lions.
I'm
lions.
Sorry.
Anyway,
looks like a dog with a mane known as a lion.
So, anyway, pleasure to be here, as always.
Good to have you here, Dave. How are things on the other side of Berkeley?
Not too bad. No complaints. I got to cut the grass again.
Of course you do, because we've had some rain recently.
Curse it all.
Mm-hmm. Dave lives veritable tens of feet from my house.
Yes, and I'm still waiting for your children to need extra college money.
Oh, right. That's right. Well, stay tuned. Yeah. Who knows what's going to happen next in this crazy world?
Skip Durst. I pay better.
Right. Oh. This is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win an autographed photograph of the Ask the Professor panel and the ATP mug. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win a prize too, the autographed photograph. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/ATP or find us on Facebook. Some more questions, continuing this beautiful set written by our executive producer emerita, Professor Vivian Dix. Again, probably home gardening or getting ready to take in another episode of the great Insert Nationality Baking Show. There's a Canadian one now.
Yes.
There's an English one. There's an American one.
Every country's got one.
But the British one is the best.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Mary Berry.
We were watching it on Create the other night, and somebody used the term tiddly bits. I was like, I watched the show half for just the words. But
oh, yeah.
I was absolutely. Like, I had to look that up. Like, what does that mean?
What is it? If you're making a gingerbread man, don't put any tiddly bits on. Think of the children. Think of the children.
Think of the family show.
The humanity.
In March 2018, the New York Times acknowledged its obituary section, published since 1851, by the way, had failed to provide obituaries for many notable women. In an effort to update its practices, it published a special section entitled Overlooked and promised to make this approach a regular feature in the obituary section. The following are questions about the women featured in this first effort to acknowledge those previously overlooked. Nice move. This woman was a photographer. She was born in 1923, who died by her own hand, 1971. Her maiden name was Nemirov, but she's better known by her married name. She's famous for photos of people, quote, outside the margins of respectable society, unquote, such as a boy wearing a pro-war Bomb Hanoi button, the king and queen of a senior citizen's dance, a widow sitting alone in her bedroom. Who was she? Hint. She was married to the actor who played Dr. Sidney Friedman on the TV series MASH.
Okay, so Alan Arbus's wife is... Great, I know Alan Arbus, but I don't know the photographer. How bad is that?
We need to find his wife's name. You are correct with Alan Arbus, for sure.
Okay.
Because the TV element was there for Dave.
Darn. I know once you tell me, I'm going to like kick myself.
I was about to say, same first name as my mother. I know that's really helpful to you. She won't like it either, because this is actually a variation of my mother's name, but it's worth a shot. Here's your last hint. My mom's nickname is D.
Desiree?
Nope.
Deborah?
Nope.
Dominique?
Nope. One more.
Delightful?
Dominica.
I'm thinking... Diane Arbus?
Yeah, it's Diane. Diane Arbus. My mom's name is...
No, I'm just rummaging through my head like... Age-wise.
You got it.
Couldn't come up with it. Okay.
For the record, she married Alan Arbus when she was 18. Yeah. They later divorced, but remained close. My mom's actual name is Diana, and she hates it when people call her Diane, and I can understand that. Absolutely. This woman lived from 1862 to 1931. Although born into slavery, she became a well-known and respected journalist. She published in black newspapers for black people and is famous for her anti-lynching campaign. Called the Princess of the Press, she pioneered reporting techniques that still apply today. One of her most noted statements was, quote, "Somebody must show that the Afro-American race is more sinned against than sinning, and it seems to have fallen upon me to do so," unquote. Who was she?
Where's Roy Finkenbein when we need him?
You know? Roy would know this one right off the top of his head.
Sure.
Yep.
When did she pass away?
1931. I have to flip back a page, I'm afraid, but it was 1931. Yep. Born into slavery, 1862.
Journalist, too.
Yes. Wow. I recognized the name, and I knew she was a journalist, but I didn't know all the other backstory. It's a rather unique first name that starts with the letter I that almost sounds like you're going to say one of those really weird Northwestern state names. So that narrows it down, right?
Idaho?
Ida is her first name. Okay. Ida Wells. Ida B. Wells is how she's known. Yeah. Look her up. Fun stories. This writer lived from 1891 to 1964. Her first novel, Quicksand, was also the first published under her own name. It dealt with a woman of color teaching at a black boarding school that espouses white standards. Her second novel, Passing, explored the life of mixed-race women, one of whom is passing as white. She was the first African-American woman to receive a Guggenheim Fellowship. Who was she? Initials N.L.
Nora.
This is tough.
Nellie?
I'm giving you Nellie. It's Nella is her first name. And a very, for lack of a better description, Swedish-sounding last name. Starts with an L.
Lindbergh?
No.
Lindstrom?
Nope. Although those are good guesses. Larson.
Oh, Larson.
Nella Larson is her name. First African-American woman to receive a Guggenheim Fellowship. Very cool.
Okay.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. We should get more questions like that. All right, we'll go back to major gear shifting and see where that takes us. The top-grossing biographical documentary of all time is a very recent film, according to The Hollywood Reporter. About whom was this documentary made in the last 2 years? You can guess it.
I was going to say W, but I think that's more than 2 years ago.
I was going to say JFK, but...
Is it that serial killer guy?
It is definitely whatever the opposite of a serial killer is.
Is a hero?
A hero, yes. A very mild-mannered hero of children's television.
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Rogers.
Oh, Mr. Rogers.
Fred Rogers, yes. Okay. Hint if needed, Vivian says. The title was, Won't You Be My Neighbor?
I was going to say, what, Pee Wee Herman? No.
Have you seen it?
I've seen it. It is
very good.
Spectacular. Yep. And I hesitate to bring up the part that has resounded with me the most, and I'm not even exaggerating. It basically changed my life. He was challenged post 9/11 by basically, in the sort of biblical sense, how the Pharisees like dare Jesus, can you figure this out? And he like slams him right down, drops the mic, booyah. Can you explain 9/11 to a 3-year-old? And he didn't even hesitate. He said, I would tell the child to watch the footage and look at all the people who are helping. And I was just like, that's really moving. Like that gets me like every time. If you can explain 9/11 to a 3-year-old, you're a very gifted human being. That's all I'm going to say. Recently, a Barbie doll was made, modeled after, oh my, I want to do my best here, Ibtihaj. So I think it's Ibtihaj Muhammad. What did she do in 2016 to inspire that decision?
Wasn't she the one that shot?
She won the Nobel Prize.
No? Yeah, well, she might have won a prize, but it doesn't say that here. She was the first person to do something.
Participate in the Olympics?
Yes. She was the first Muslim woman to participate in the Olympics for the United States of America wearing hijab.
Yeah.
Yes. For reference, I think you were thinking of Malala.
Malala.
Oh, okay. Yes. Malala Yousafzai.
Okay.
Yes.
But she was a fencer, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. That's cool.
I remember as well this last Olympics, so we're going to probably see more and more of it. Someone, because all you got to do, whatever, necessity is the mother of invention, invented the first hijab-based swimsuit that Muslim women could participate in swimming events, which is pretty spectacular. What is Uber's largest market in the United States of America?
San Francisco.
Yeah,
It's not San Francisco. I don't think there's enough room, frankly, for at least
not
one Uber.
It's not New York.
It is. It's New York City. Is? That's what it says here.
Nobody owns a car in New York.
No, but I was just thinking, weren't they like trying to ban them or do something or certain hours or that they couldn't drive certain times or whatever? But
wasn't it the taxi cab drivers union was trying to get on the gig economy? I mean, I don't know who wins in a battle like that, but Uber is very, very popular, right? Who was the first sitting U.S. president to travel in a helicopter?
Is it Truman?
No, it wasn't Truman, but you're in the general wheelhouse, so it wasn't Lincoln or Cleveland.
Eisenhower was in the army, so.
Yeah, Eisenhower. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was a Bell H-13J, second hint if needed. It was a trip to Camp David as an evacuation drill designed to protect the president if there was a Soviet nuclear attack. July 12th, 1947, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Yeah, that's cool.
Was it Marine One? Is that what it is?
That's the president's private. That gets him to Air Force One, right? Okay. Or her. Yeah, something like Air Force One. Okay. Yes. Okay, another question here. But before we do that, we'll take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
That was good for the self-esteem.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Our next set of questions comes from Keith Hedrick. Orange, California.
Yes.
How about that? And he says, I have enclosed 10 quotes. You need to figure
out
who said it. Yeah, right.
Keep hoping.
We'll take it, love.
You were working on your taxes, weren't you?
You need 6 out of 10 correct in order to win.
Okay. 6? This guy has low standards.
He's serious.
That's good.
That's why he writes to us.
He's a realist.
Who said?
Who said?
I have taken more out of alcohol than alcohol has taken out of me.
Joel Coward.
No, it's British.
Oh.
But it's a statesman.
Churchill.
Churchill.
Okay. That's right.
Churchill was at a party one night and this woman came up to him. You know that story?
That story. Yeah, but tell her.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Tell her. Oh, and she was being obnoxious and she said, you know, Mr. Churchill, you're drunk. And he said, yes, madam, that's true, and you're ugly. But in the morning, I shall be sober, and you will still be unclean.
This wasn't Queen Elizabeth, was it?
he didn't know who it was.
A little funky on a Friday afternoon with some questions from our executive producer emerita, Professor Vivian Dix. And we continue the big mix-up. We were just doing a question about Eisenhower being the first sitting U.S. president to travel in a helicopter. But yeah, I think it's Marine One is the one that lands on the White House lawn. According to the Airlines Reporting Corporation, in 2014, the percentage of one-way tickets versus round-trip tickets bought by American travelers in 2014 was 29%. What made the percentage from January to April 2018 so out of the ordinary? So let's just call that a third for, you know, give or take. What happened during January to April 2018? This is weird and
like
creepy.
Like a hurricane? Or
big
like,
data is weird. That's all I have to say.
Like weather? You know, is it like... So there was a big change from the 29%.
From the 29% of 2014, yeah.
They changed their rules?
No.
People got stranded somewhere because...
Does it have to do with airlines and deals or something like that?
That sounds about right. But
we'll give you a $9 ticket.
Yet.
It's $100 a bag, though.
Wait, that wasn't... Was that about the volcano that exploded
It could
Iceland?
Have been. We actually don't have the detail, but what happened to the approximate 30% of 2014... From January to April 2018.
It jumped to like 50% or 60%.
Yeah, it went to 44% one-way tickets. That, I don't know, that seems creepy to me. Yeah. What's going on here? Yeah. Who's going only one place for 44? I'm sure it's a natural disaster. I mean, that makes sense.
That's what I'm thinking.
Wait, the way you asked the question, I thought there was going to be some explanation of why it happened.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have the explanation.
I've never understood, like, you can buy a round trip ticket, and that's probably cheaper than a one-way ticket, isn't it?
In some cases, yeah, it absolutely
is. So why not
is.
Just, like, tear up the second half and just not board?
I mean, you are risking getting on the no-fly list if you do that now. That would be bad.
Thanks. Yikes. Okay, I don't want to be there.
Every summer, we hear reports of shark sightings, dun-dun-dun, and even shark attacks off U.S. beaches. We are less surprised when they occur on the West Coast. Sharks, however, are not limited to one coast. How many species of sharks live in the New York City area? Species of sharks.
Pool sharks, poker sharks,
loan sharks.
You know, none of those are listed, but I like the way you guys think.
That's on the East River, right?
It's actually more than 16 species of sharks.
Wow.
On the Eastern Seaboard.
34.
Baby shark, mama shark, papa shark.
Big, little,
daddy
small.
Shark. It's 26, Mara. You're not too far off. 26 species of sharks. Just in New York City alone. I mean, it sounds like it's in New York City, you know, but, you know, whatever. It's not actually in
the
city.
It isn't some, like, Chinatown restaurant in their soup or something like that?
You never know. Shark fin soup, right? Isn't that a classic?
No, not anymore.
Classic joke from speaking of Looney Tunes and things like that.
Well, obviously, we need to breed more alligators in the sewers so we can get rid of some of those sharks.
More pythons.
I know I do this all the time, but I can't help myself. There was another really great video on the internet this morning of a guy doing something so stupid, he took the glasses off his own face and put them perfectly on the face of an alligator. And then, as if it was rehearsed, the alligator turned towards the camera and sort of looked like if Kissinger was an alligator. It was 7 seconds long. Yes, I agree with the head shaking. That's a stupid thing to do, but it had a really funny
payoff.
Why
did it have to be Henry Kissinger?
I don't know. They were really thick glasses, and it's just like... I drafted the Paris Peace Accord, you know what I mean?
The man's got alligator blood, you can't get rid of him.
The U.S. government entity everyone loves to hate is the IRS, of course, Internal Revenue Service. On the upside, however, they do provide employment. Approximately how many people, as of 2018, are employed by the IRS?
50,000.
It's more.
100,000.
It's less.
70,000.
70 is exactly correct.
Wow. You're today's Kendra.
Exactly correct.
Exactly correct. Let the other people put the glasses on the gator, and then you jump in and take the video. That's the way we do it. 70,000 people. I mean, there's IRS offices all across the United States. It's not just in D.C., right?
Yeah, one of my friends lives a couple miles from me, does IT for him.
Oh, okay.
They're all over the place.
Go. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Let's see here. As I write these questions, our Detroit Tigers baseball team is struggling greatly.
Struggling
so
is a
we don't know what you're talking about, Vivian. Oh, well, as they say, wait till next year. Meanwhile, let's talk just a bit of baseball. What left fielder and slugger said, quote, baseball is the only field of endeavor where a man can succeed 3 times out of 10 and be considered good, unquote.
Left fielder?
Left fielder and slugger. If Heather were here, we'd be pretty much set. That's your clue. Heather's a big the Red Sox fan.
I was
going
to say Ted
big
Williams. I think he was a right fielder, though.
Ted Williams is what it says here.
Oh, yeah, I thought he was a right fielder.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Left fielder and slugger. That's
why I kept on thinking, who's in left
somebody's
field?
Somebody's been watching old footage in a mirror.
I guess so.
It says the Moops here, so I can't give you credit. What is the highest price ever paid for a modern-day baseball card, and can you name the player on the card? By the
Honus
way, sold
Wagner.
Honus, yeah.
May 2018. No, this one beat Honus Wagner. It gives quite a bit away if I say that the player on the card was born and raised in Michigan.
Ty Cobb?
He ended up playing for the Yankees.
Georgia.
I'm sort of surprised. I thought that was a total giveaway. Modern era player.
Jeter.
Retired.
Yeah.
Derek Jeter. And how much did the card go for? You have to be kidding me. It was his rookie card.
No.
Well, Honus Wagner's went for $200,000. Yeah. So if we beat that, $300,000?
You know, it says here $99,100. But I remember that about the Honus Wagner card, too. So maybe this is just in the modern era.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, because I could swear the Honus Wagner, I mean, just the rarity of it, too.
I remember reading that it went for six figures. So something that's goofy about this question.
Yeah.
How tall was the tallest player in pro baseball history? 2002 to 2013 is when he was in the...
6'8"?
You know what? He was taller.
What?
No, no.
Well, that's a strike
big
zone.
Big unit was 6'9", so it's got to be more than that.
7'2".
Yeah.
I'm giving it to you. 6'11". John Rauch played relief pitching for 7 different teams from 2002 to 2013.
I was
going to
say, can you imagine like the strike zone on that guy? You could just throw
it. Well, he's probably a pitcher. I mean, the long lever arm. Most of the starting pitchers in the majors are 6'3", 6'4", or bigger.
Yeah.
6'11", that is a tall human being. And who said, you should play baseball? Like, isn't it just the default setting?
Well, no. If you're very tall and you can get that whipping motion through your arm, that's a great advantage.
How many stitches are on every baseball?
88.
It's 88. Yeah, 88 stitches of wax thread. Yeah,
that's, I know that from the movie. That was the baseball movie with
Field of Dreams.
No, the good one. Crash Davis.
The Natural.
Oh, no. With
Sandlot.
With Robbins.
Yes.
And
Major League.
And his future. Yeah, no.
And his future partner.
Bull Durham.
Yeah, that's it.
You didn't like
I'm
Field of Dreams?
Literally naming every single baseball
movie. I like Field of Dreams, but
I was going to say Bad News Bears with Walter Matthau?
The good one.
Because when I play baseball, I'm a catcher, so Crash Davis is my icon.
Of course. Wait, who played Crash Davis in that movie?
Kevin Costner.
Yeah. Kevin Costner. Okay, I was about to say, was Corbin Burnson also in that movie?
No, that was Major League.
Major League.
Yeah. Now
with Charlie Sheen.
And... Yep, I'm getting my wires crossed here.
I'm thinking of it, I think, for Love of the Game, I like even better than both.
That's a very good movie. Sam Raimi.
Pride of the Yankees?
Yeah. Never seen that one. No,
he was it. I'm trying to remember. Didn't they have to like reverse his uniform because he couldn't bat left-handed or something like that?
Really?
Yeah, they filmed it in reverse and they had to flop the film.
Weird. The song "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" was written by two men who never attended a baseball game. Makes sense to me. Name the men and identify the year they wrote the song. We'll make it one of those questions where if you get either side, you're in pretty good shape. Yeah, there's not many clues I can give you. Wow.
Probably goes way back, like 1910 or something.
Yeah, I'm giving it to you. 1908. The names of the gentlemen were Jack Norworth and Albert von Tilzer.
We were just going to go there.
Norworth did not see his first professional game until 32 years after the song was published, and for von Tilzer, it was 20 years after. That is the weirdest thing I have ever heard.
You'd think that they would want to go out and see a game.
Or get inspired to write it. I don't know.
It reminds me a little bit of, from my generation, Pac-Man Fever. Like, did people actually understand the video games, or did they just write a disco song about Pac-Man?
True.
I mean, let's get serious here, you know? Okay, those were very awesome questions. Thank you very much for sending those in, Vivian. Very, very cool stuff. We need people to send us all sorts of questions.
We need more questions.
Keep this show going. But now the time has come for Ask the Professor Favorites, as my 7-year-old son would say. So who is going to be in charge of choosing a category today?
Fine, I'll go.
Okay. You don't have to raise your hand.
No. That's for the radio audience to see. Yeah. That's awesome.
Got it.
Since we were talking about Olympic sports, favorite Olympic sport?
Like Olympic sport to watch.
Oh, can I answer for Dan?
What do we have coming up in 2020? Is it summer?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, because we recently
Okay, I take that back then.
Yeah. So let's go a cold Olympic sport and a warm Olympic sport. How's that? I think I know what Dan's going to still
Dan,
say.
Dan, go for it. Since you're on the spot.
I always like curling. But also like in winter. I don't know what
biathlon?
Else. No, that's boring.
Biathlon's only entertaining in James Bond movies.
True. Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Beach volleyball.
No.
No?
Boring. Two people volleyball.
Actually, I don't find it very easy to watch either.
I don't find it sort of like, very exciting to watch.
People getting sand all over their face.
Actually, diving is probably pretty good, too.
Diving's good. I actually really, really like to watch fencing, but they basically never show that
on CBC.
CBC, of course they would. Yeah. Well, come on. We don't watch the American coverage when the Winter Olympics
but
is
Bob
in,
Costas
you know. Yeah, come
sugarcoats
on.
Everything.
Always watch the CBC for Winter Olympics. My thing is, I don't, for whatever reason, get addicted to like watching bobsled. But like the luge and the skeleton, for some reason, I find that absolutely fascinating. It's
because
like,
their face is like 2 inches off the ice.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I could die. Let's just give this a go. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, go for it. You know, whatever.
So that's your winter sport. Okay, what's your summer?
Summer, I mean, fencing. I think watching fencing is mildly entertaining, people with swords. I really do get a kick out of watching the opening ceremonies. That's me. I'm pretty
That's my
that
favorite
way.
Part.
Yeah.
Or what about closing ceremonies?
Closing ceremonies are always interesting, yeah. Where is the next one? 2020?
Tokyo.
Okay. There we go. Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one that was going to be Chicago, if I remember correctly, when they went up against it. They were the finalists. So.
Okay.
All right. We need Dave and
Jeff
and
Mara to chime in here. Ice hockey.
Of course.
For winter and for summer. Come back with me on that one. I got to think about that one. Doggone it.
Not judo.
No.
Curling for winter,
okay.
Obvious
okay.
reasons, and for summer, I hear they're bringing baseball back finally, so
I'll
throw that.
That's right.
What about women's softball?
But, you know, as far as fencing, I like fencing, but what I really want to see is broadswords.
Yeah.
Broadswords and armor.
Pikes.
Oh my gosh. Hacking away.
Little
at
Game
other.
Of Thrones.
Yeah, ice fencing is going on. Broadswords and armor.
Yeah.
It's a good statement.
Javelin. You know, with
absolutely.
The...
What do you think, Mara?
It's easy for me. I mean, coming from a background where I danced my whole life, winter is figure skating, summer is gymnastics.
Uh-huh. Yep, that's right. Probably the two highest rated sports in both of those.
Rhythmic or traditional?
Both.
There you go. All right, Dave, the only piece we're missing here is Dave Chow, Summer Olympics favorite
20
sport.
20 seconds.
Competitive walking.
Pressure.
Probably one of the track and field sports, though.
Okay, all right.
You know, I don't mind watching like Usain Bolt just like tear apart. You know, that's always fun.
Absolutely. I tell you what, it's time for us to do our own little relay. I have no baton to pass around, but I will do it this way because it's time for us to say goodbye, Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Maggio.
Sweet.
Professor Boats.
CDS LTS 40S.
Professor Livesey.
Bye.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed today by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.